This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
But I think the three countries want to show that they're sovereign and they would like to see ECOWAS reduce the number of conditions on these three countries before they are welcomed back.
That's David Monda, political science professor at City University in New York, on Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger, turning their backs on the West African bloc, ECOWAS. Details coming up. Also, the U.S. military says it has completed its withdrawal from a major air base in Niger. And South Africa has extended the visas of thousands of foreigners until the end of the year. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The West African bloc ECOWAS has warned that it risks disintegration and worsened insecurity after Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger formalized their breakaway union. It comes after the military leaders of the three countries said on Saturday that they were irrevocably turning their backs on the 15-member ECOWAS to form a confederation of their own. David Monda, political science professor at City University in New York, tells me the move is an assertion by the military governments to consolidate their ascension to power through coups, and basically they are using it to negotiate diplomatically with ECOWAS.
I say it's a doubling down from the three countries, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso. I think it's an assertion of their efforts to consolidate their power, their illegal ascension to power through military means. And they're really using this as an effort to negotiate, I think, diplomatically, to show ECOWAS that they're not dying to stay in the union, that they can very much easily walk away. We shouldn't also forget that the three countries themselves are landlocked. So I think in economic sense, this is actually problematic for them. But I think the three countries want to show that they're sovereign and they would like to see ECOWAS reduce the number of conditions on these three countries before they are welcomed back.
And Professor, some of the sanctions that ECOWAS had implemented have since been removed, and the bloc has been trying to persuade the juntas to drop their threat to leave.
Because they're very much trying to reconsolidate their sovereignty. They're trying to show that they are independent states, and that as Mali, as Niger and Burkina Faso, as much as they are ostracized and they're kicked out of a lot of continental bodies, that they will assert their sovereignty. And I think there's strength in numbers. So the three of them also staying together is also another very important point. We should also not forget that these very same three countries have also had a very antagonistic relationship with France. So they are not only reasserting their sovereignty within ECOWAS and within the continent, but they are also reasserting their sovereignty in relation to France, a former colonial power and a very powerful state, and even in terms of their confrontation with the United States. So I think very broadly, in terms of a diplomatic framework, it's really these three countries reasserting their diplomatic bona fide, their diplomatic credentials, their sovereignty. But I think long term, it's really a negotiating tool to find out how can ECOWAS accommodate more of their own internal interests of these three countries without insisting to a fast track return to democratic rule or to civilian rule. I think this is more of a diplomatic tactic by the three countries, because the three economies together, as a percentage of the ECOWAS trade, is relatively small. As I'd mentioned, the three countries are vulnerable. They're all three landlocked countries. They will suffer more from being outside of ECOWAS than ECOWAS will gain from the three countries being within.
And you are so right, Professor. The three military-led countries have all expelled French soldiers who were there helping to fight jihadist group and turned towards Russia for military assistance. Let me ask you, Professor, the bloc has appointed Senegalese President Bassirou Diomaye to mediate the crisis.
I think there is a space for him to bring some kind of reasonable dialogue, and it might be that he tries to establish some kind of middle ground where ECOWAS doesn't lose space, but also the three countries, Mali, Burkina, and Niger, also don't lose space. So it might be something around the conditions of a conditional readmission, maybe over an extended period of time to hand over to civilian rule, and maybe some kind of immunity for the generals, depending on how they negotiate it. Because we also need to understand that as much as ECOWAS is an economic union, there's also a lot of strategic and security imperatives within ECOWAS. So part of the challenge with ECOWAS expelling these three countries is it deteriorates the security situation in the Sahel with a lot of the jihadi groups, which are also very threatening to many countries in West Africa.
That was David Monda, political science professor at City University in New York, speaking by phone with me from New York. The U.S. military says it has completed its withdrawal from a major airbase in Niger, Air Base 101, located near the airport in the capital Niamey, had been used to tackle militant groups in the Sahel region. But following a coup last year, Niger's ruling junta in April ordered the U.S. to withdraw its nearly 1,000 military personnel from the country. U.S. Air Force Major General Kenneth Eckman said the focus would now shift to leaving Airbase 201, a $100 million drone facility near the desert city of Agadez, by September 15th. Niger and its military-led neighbors in the Sahel region, Burkina Faso and Mali, have torn up defense agreements with U.S., European, and United Nations forces. Instead, they've fostered closer defense, diplomatic, and business ties with Russia. South Africa's new Minister of Home Affairs has extended the visas of thousands of foreigners in the country until the end of the year. His action is aimed at keeping skilled workers who, under the previous administration, were at risk of being forced to leave South Africa. Darren Taylor reports.
The issue of foreign workers, whether legal or not, was a hot topic during South Africa's recent election. Some parties campaigned on promises to reserve jobs for South Africans who live in a country with the highest official unemployment rate in the world, topping 30%. That means Home Affairs Minister Leon Schreiber's decision to sign an order protecting the rights of foreigners goes against the grain of current thought in Africa's most industrialized economy. 36-year-old Schreiber is a member of South Africa's second largest political party, the Democratic Alliance. His appointment is part of a governance deal with the African National Congress, which failed to get enough votes to form a majority government. Immigration lawyer Gary Eisenberg says the ANC made it difficult for foreigners to work and study in South Africa, and the country still is suffering the consequences.
A lot of people are walking away. They're simply going elsewhere. They can't wait a year and a half for a work visa application to be processed or a spousal visa to be processed. And a lot of people are leaving the country, helping the outflow, the brain drain, the outflow of much needed skills to fill some of our skills deficits in our labor market.
He says the previous administration had a bad attitude toward immigrants and describes the new minister's approach to the issue of foreign workers as refreshing and sensible. Schreiber says he's committed to ending problems often associated with the Home Affairs Department.
The reality is that the department is currently sitting on about 145,000 applications that need to be processed. And so what this concession does is it ensures that people who have already applied for renewals or waivers or appeals on their existing legal visas will not be punished while the department tries to clear this backlog. So that is, of course, the ultimate goal.
Under previous ANC administrations, thousands of foreigners had to leave South Africa because the immigration department did not process their paperwork. Schreiber says he'll use his budget to improve technology and training of immigration officials and to get rid of corrupt personnel he says often demand bribes in exchange for processing documents.
We sometimes underestimate the ability that Home Affairs has to help enable economic growth and job creation by making sure that we facilitate the lawful process of people who want to either contribute skills or capital, investment or tourism to South Africa. And I think that the move will hopefully send a signal both in South Africa and to the world that we are indeed going to make sure that where people want to come to this country legally, want to contribute and help us create jobs, that they will be welcomed and that the process will be managed in a more effective way than has been the case up until now.
Schreiber says red tape means South Africa loses out on many tourists, investors and workers, such as electrical engineers and energy specialists, who are in short supply in the country. South African business and tourism associations have also welcomed Schreiber's extension, saying it shows that the country's open for business. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Rival Sudanese political factions attended reconciliation talks in Cairo on Saturday, the first since the country's conflict began almost 15 months ago, but admitted there was little prospect of ending the war quickly. The Democratic Bloc, which is aligned with the army, refused to hold joint sessions with the Takadum faction, which it accuses of sympathizing with the rapid support forces. Neither the army nor the RSF attended. Reuters reports that while Egypt was able to assemble the group, the main attendees were seated at opposite sides of the hall at the conference's opening. Finance Minister and Democratic Bloc leader Jibril Ibrahim told Reuters it would send the wrong message to civilians and soldiers if his side were to sit and eat and drink and laugh with the people who are allied and partners in the crimes that are happening. U.S. Special Envoy Tom Perriello said he hoped momentum from Saturday's talks would carry on to another meeting called by the African Union next week, another of several initiatives. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America, and for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. French President Emmanuel Macron will remain in office, but the rest of the country's political landscape has been split and left in chaos after national elections yesterday. With the NATO summit in Washington this week and the Paris Olympics less than 3 weeks away, Macron refused the resignation of his prime minister, asking him today to remain temporarily as the head of the government. Charles Deladesma of the Associated Press has the story.
French voters have split their parliament into left, centre and far right, leaving the country with the prospect of a deadlocked parliament and political paralysis. The turmoil in the EU's second largest economy could rattle markets and have far-reaching implications for the war in Ukraine, global diplomacy and Europe's economic stability. It also comes just weeks before Paris hosts the Olympics. President Emmanuel Macron had called the election after the far right surged in French voting for the European Parliament. He said turning to voters again would provide clarification, but the outcome has shown the opposite. France's main share index fell on the vote. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
This coming week, could be consequential for U.S. President Joe Biden's re-election bid as voices continue to grow for him to leave the race amid concern over his age and capacity to lead. So far, however, he still has the support of many of his peers, even as they acknowledge Democratic voters' worries. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
U.S. President Joe Biden addressed a friendly crowd Sunday during a church service in Philadelphia. He talked about his achievements, even as concerns about his age and capacity to lead continue to grow. Following his recent poor debate performance, the president has only doubled down on his determination to remain in the presidential race. He made his position clear during Friday's exclusive interview with ABC News anchor George Stephanopoulos.
I don't think anybody's more qualified to be president or win this race than me.
Biden still enjoys broad support for his re-election bid among his peers. But worries among voters are growing and were acknowledged by Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, who appeared Sunday on CNN's State of the Union show.
It's not questions about his character or his decency or who he cares about or who he fights for, but questions as to whether this is still the old Joe Biden.
The decision on whether to leave the presidential race is for Biden to make, Democratic Representative Adam Schiff told NBC's Meet the Press, stressing it will be consequential for the general election.
Joe Biden is going to need to consider, for his own sake and his own legacy, can he beat Donald Trump? Is the best to beat Donald Trump? But also, the profound impact this decision, maybe the most important of his presidency, will have on the House, on the Senate, on the future of the country.
On Saturday, Donald Trump took to his Truth Social platform and wrote, quote, "Crooked Joe Biden should ignore his many critics and move forward with alacrity and strength with his powerful and far-reaching campaign." While the headlines have focused on Biden, Trump's vice president pick could steal the spotlight if announced this week. Republican Senator J.D. Vance is among those being considered for the job. He was interviewed Sunday on NBC.
He's got a lot of good people he could choose from. It's the policies that worked and the leadership style that worked for the American people. I think we have to bring that back to the White House.
President Biden's attention will turn to the NATO summit, which he will host in Washington starting Tuesday, while Trump is expected to rally in Doral, Florida, and Butler, Pennsylvania, this week. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Since gaining independence from British rule in 1960, Nigeria welcomed many non-African migrants from Asia and the Middle East. Migration experts say Indian and Lebanese migrants have the most palpable impact on Nigerian society. Sharda Maganti is an Indian expatriate who moved to the state of Kano 40 years ago. Alhassan Bala has her story as part of our series on expats living in Africa.
Indian expatriate Sharada Maganti has been living in Nigeria for four decades. She first started working as a kindergarten teacher in Lagos and continued teaching after relocating to Kano. A few years later, she rose to the position of Director of Public and Government Relations at the Skyline University.
I have been here for good four decades, I must say. And, you know, when I came in, I have come as a youngster with aspirations. And while I moved forward, all my aspirations were fulfilling. And then I was in the right job. Probably I can say I was in the right place at the right time. And moving forward in my career, it was like, it was from starting from a kindergarten teacher to this director level in the university.
In their effort to assimilate into their host communities, migrants often face obstacles. Mrs. Maganti is one of the lucky ones. She says that living in Kano proved to be less challenging due to similarities between the Indian and the Hausa family value system.
We have power cuts. We have lack of, you know, probably insecurity, probably no water situation, or going into the rural area, the communication between people. All these were each situations that were needed to be handled. And I felt, you know, each situation gave me the spirit to move forward. I've seen the Hausa culture is similar to the Indian culture, whether it is, you know, the family relationships or the affection, you know, the family togetherness, and also respecting elders and the religious values.
Historically, non-African migrants, particularly Arabs from Middle East, started coming to Nigeria for business activities in 19th century. Multiple generations of Lebanese have made their home in Nigeria. Most of them descendant of those who arrived in Nigeria in 19th century. Indian and many other non-African migrants started migrating to Nigeria during colonial and post-colonial period and continue to live in Nigeria. Their stay, says Sadiq Saluh Abubakar, has helped in developing many sectors in Nigeria.
But the presence of these migrants has fostered a spirit of cultural exchange and mutual growth. They bring diverse perspectives and skills, enriching the whole society in numerous ways, from technological advancements and educational contributions to economic growth and job creation. Their impact is deeply felt and appreciated. Their integration into the community has also strengthened social ties.
While many Nigerians move out of Nigeria in search of greener pastures, for Sharada Maganti, living in Kano has been the best decision of her life.
It has been the best part of my life. So I always say right now in any of my seminars, I say that Kano has given me life and it is time for me to give back to Kano.
According to Statista, Nigeria host 1.3 million international migrants, which is the largest share of non-African migrants in the entire West Africa, with Indian expatriates contributing the largest share. More than 50,000 Indians live in Nigeria, followed by Lebanese. Since 2014, a significant increase has been noted in the number of Chinese migrants in Nigeria due to recent construction and mining activities. Al-Hassan Bala, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And now, our sports segment. In studio with me is our VOA sports analyst, Omolemo Kale, and he's here to fill us on the results from the UEFA European Championship and Copa America over the weekend. Welcome to African News Tonight, Omolemo.
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, UEFA, what are the results of the UEFA European Championship so far?
Yes, so for the UEFA Championship, we're having exciting semifinals. We have the Netherlands versus England facing off against each other, and we also have Spain versus France for an exciting match.
What about Copa America? Which teams are still standing in the tournament so far?
Yes, so now we have Messi's Argentina going to be facing off Canada, and we also have Uruguay versus Colombia facing off against each other.
And Omolemo, any other exciting sports news that happened over the weekend?
Yes, some exciting news over in the Tour de France. Baname Garme from Eritrea clinched his second win in Stage 8 of this year's Tour de France. With this win, this makes Grime the first black African to triumph on the Tour de France ever. His strategic uphill sprint that edged him the win, that won most likely, he is sure to stir up a lot of buzz for this year's Tour de France in cycling's most prestigious race.
Our sports analyst, Omolemo Kale, thank you for your input.
Thank you so much.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer David Van Dee and our engineer Jonah Cummings, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.